Hello and welcome to our Comprehensive Primary Care Initiative podcast. My name is Karen Simchak, and I'm the moderator for this program. My guest today is Dr. Jean Heslin. Thank you, Dr. Heslin, for speaking with me today about the CPC initiative. Before the interview begins, can you take a minute and introduce yourself?
Sure, Karen. Thank you for inviting me to be on this. I'm Dr. Eugene Heslin. I'm a physician from Saugerties, New York, about 100 miles north of New York City. I practice in a small group practice of four physicians. We take care of our community. About 10 of the 20,000 patients that live here are part of our practice, and we've been working on the CPC initiative now for just about a year as a medical home as well.
Great, thank you. So let's get started. Can you start off with what is the CPC initiative?
Sure. The CPC initiative is a multi-payer effort between public and private healthcare payers working on strengthening primary care. So Medicare is unique in the fact that they're now working with commercial payers in a joint effort to help us primary care physicians to be able to improve how we do care. And so in year one of the project, it really is a build year. And then in year two, three, and four, we're doing building and measuring. So what's unique about this is just that they're helping us financially to make us whole as we start to develop new models of medicine in terms of helping us develop our IT systems, helping us to improve our human resources, care managers, medical assistants, et cetera. And then as we move through the project, increasingly complex tasks are asked of us to be able to improve our patients' care in looking at both the access to care, the quality of care, and also cost of care. As we move through, our initial payments that we use to build the system actually decrease, and we move into more of a shared savings model. So it's exciting to be able to be given the resources, but then to actually be held accountable to make sure those resources are accomplishing a goal.
Great. Thank you for that explanation. Can you tell me a little bit more about the key elements that make up a CPC practice?
Absolutely. So CPC is really a really neat project. We look at it in several different ways. We look at it as, you know, some people say medical home on steroids because it encompasses the primary care model of patient-centered medical home. We look at it as a meaningful use and IT component. But really what it is it's managing patients in high-risk populations. We know that the top 5% of the utilizers probably utilize 60% or more of the resources of the healthcare dollar, as developing methodologies and ways to help to take care of those patients. It's improving the access to care. We know so well that when people don't have the appropriate access, they actually do worse. It's engaging patients to become more involved in how they care for themselves, because we know as a healthcare system, if people are engaged in the process, we're able to actually improve their healthcare. If they simply are passive participants, they're not able to understand what we're doing. They're less likely to do the things we want them to do. My grandfather, I'll tell you a story. He used to come home from the doctor and said, "That's not a good doctor." He says, I asked him why. He'd go, "Well, he didn't tell me why my knee hurt." I said, "Well, did you tell him that your knee hurt?" And he said, "Well, no, he's a doctor. He should know it." And yet, we're not magicians. We know what people teach us, and they know what we teach them. And so that's important as we get people to engage. It's figuring out how to learn how to prevent people from getting things. We can't prevent diabetes, but we can certainly educate people on how to better take care of it. But we can help to prevent obesity, which is a leading cause of diabetes in the United States. So we can do things. And then finally, when people do end up having medical issues that primary care can't handle, then we should be able to appropriately move them through the medical neighborhood, the body of people that we rely on to be able to make sure our patients are cared for. As primary care physician, I really have two roles in life. The first is to know what I know well enough to be able to care for my patients. And the second is to know what I don't know well enough to be able to get them appropriately referred on and then get them back here in my office to take care of them. And sometimes my role is actually to translate what's been said by the specialist to them back to what they can actually understand in my office. I spend a lot of time actually educating them about what they have, and that actually improves how they care for themselves. So that's kind of the elements of the whole project.
Great. Thank you for explaining that. And my next question is, why is this program important to you as a provider, and then how did your practice get selected to participate in this initiative?
Well, as a provider, we've seen the need to change the way we practice medicine. One of the things that we started back in about 2008 working on NCQA medical home initiatives and have been certified twice in that process, but we also understood that if we didn't start to change how we did medicine and just saw patients on an individual basis, we were never going to be able to take care of our population in our community. So we were kind of early adopters into the medical home model, and we consistently strive to figure out how the different systems of medicine were going to change and then participate in them. We as a practice have always believed that if you don't continue to change, you simply cease to function. And so that was, you know, kind of how we became involved in the projects. And then in terms of getting selected for the initiative, I think we met a lot of the criteria. We had an electronic medical record that was a certified system. We had participated in some primary care initiatives previously. We met the financial and demographic criteria that were necessary. And we had the payers, which in our community came together, and they were willing to support the practices in doing this type of initiative. So we had payers on one side willing to participate in the project. We had our practice willing to participate in the project. And then we needed something to focus that, and that was CMS Medicare that said, okay, we can focus all this and kind of be the convener and get everybody to play on the same field. It's the most amazing, unique project in terms of making these type of things happen.
Great. Thank you for explaining that further. My next question is, Moore, can you tell me more about what it takes to become a successful CPC practice? You had talked earlier about year one milestones and following year milestones. Could you elaborate on that?
Sure. In year one, there are nine milestones. But in a more generic way, the way to be successful in CPC is, one, to have the desire to change. You have to be willing to change what you do. You have to be willing to accept the fact that you get thoughtful feedback from people and understand that you may be great at what you do some of the time, but you're not great at what you do all the time. And so you have to be able to figure out how to use other decision tools, computer systems, to be able to function. You have to be able to have an open mind and the intestinal fortitude, the willingness to stick with the change, because these are not easy changes, because you're asking for several things. You're asking for process changes. You're asking for information technology changes. So specifically, the nine milestones that we have to meet include maintaining a budget. Now, in our practice, we've had budgets for a long time, but a number of the practices that were introduced to this project, you know, their budget was basically, we have enough cash to get through whatever we're doing. We had to be able to start to risk stratify and look at our high-risk patients. And so, you know, I could look and tell you the 10 patients that are 20 or 30 that I have that are high-risk. I know who they are. But you know what? My three partners didn't know who they were. The people covering for us at nighttime didn't know who they were. So we had to come up with a process by where other people could know. And then had to have 24/7 access to the medical record. That's pretty easy because we can all dial into our record. But we have a couple of covering physicians. We had to develop methodologies by which they could get at our medical records as well. We had to be able to figure out how we were going to improve the access to patient care and our patient care experience. So we actually have used CGCAPS to do some evaluations of the practice, and we're familiar with this because we had done this with our medical homework as well. And not a great surprise, the patients principally are upset about how long it takes to get in, how long it takes to get through on the phones, and when they're anxious, how long it takes to get results back to them. So those become initiatives that we started to work on to see if we can improve We're in the process of it. I would say that we are nowhere near where I would like us to be, but we're better than we used to be. In medicine, you know, a lot of us live in the world of we're A-type personalities, and it either has to be all right every time or it's always all wrong. And part of what I try to teach and work with my other physicians and colleagues in the office is that it doesn't have to be that way. As long as we keep kind of mushing the process forward and we're continually getting a little bit better, it actually makes a difference. Using data to get improvements in what we do becomes key to that fact. And so what we end up doing is we look at, for example, diabetes, hypertension, and frankly, team building, because we have to figure out how, if we can look at our data and we can then say, this is our data, this is how we want to try to improve our data, come back and recheck that cycle back again, and in some respects, we do a little bit of healthy competition in the office. So all the doctors know what all the other doctors do, and when I'm the lowest in the list, I actually look pretty hard at the fact of how can I improve my data? How can I get my nurse to do something a little bit different? We think about care coordination to help to improve that data. We think about how where we fall apart in the office, how we're able to take our RN care manager and our nursing teams to start to work with our patients so that we do improve their diabetes scores, how we get people to use community resources better through pointing out that they simply exist. Some people don't even know these things exist. And then improving that shared decision-making, sitting them down with a tool. So in our office, we're using two tools right now. The requirement is to do one. We chose to do two. One is pharyngitis and sore throats. The other one is internal derangement of the knee, arthritis of the knee, and what to do about it. That's a tough thing to do because we've always done shared decision-making. You talk to the patient about what their options are. But this is actually using a tool and going through it with them and asking for their input along the way. That's kind of an interesting step. And then the final real requirement is to meet the requirements of meaningful use stage one, which we had actually done prior to joining this project. So we looked at the list initially of these things and said, gosh, we've done all these things already. This is going to be easy. Well, not so. It wasn't as easy as we thought, and we're not as good as we thought, and we're striving to make these goals. And so it becomes a constant assessment and reassessment. The thing that we actually found was the hardest thing to do is to have the continuous team building. Once you kind of fall into that area where people start dithering around the office, then the patients see you doing it, and then it becomes all this anxiousness and everything like that. And so we actually are refocusing ourselves on that as we start year two. And the year two requirements are tougher than the year one requirements because they set a higher bar. So the way I think about CPC and success, if you listen to the way I went through, I actually went through the 9 milestones that they're going for, but it's kind of every step builds upon the other step, and there's a logic to what they're looking for from CMS to be able to get to those goals of improved access, improved quality, and then through the thoughtful shared decisioning, we're able to then end up with cost reduction. So what we end up with is a rationalization of how we practice medicine rather than the worst situation, which would be a rationing of how we practice medicine. And it's a play on words, but it actually makes a big difference because that's what patients need. It's a rational way to be able to understand what we do and how we do it. They are better to accept it, and they're better to participate in it. They do better.
Great. So you mentioned all these changes that you've been going through and continue to go through as you're being part of the CBC initiative. What about the quality of care? Can you speak to changes that you've seen in quality of care since joining this initiative?
Absolutely. Quality, I define it in multiple ways. One is in the biometrics, the things that we track, our HEDIS scores with the insurance. insurance companies, our absolute values in terms of some of the NQF measures, and then also in terms of cost, and then finally in terms of patient satisfaction. So broad strokes, when we received our NCQA level 3, we also received the distinction category from them, which means that they went out and did a patient set of surveys, and we met the criteria to say that our patients were satisfied with the care that they were receiving from our office. And so that's an external review of what we've been able to do on that side. In terms of our quality metrics on HEDIS and NQF, we've scored in the top end of the project as we've moved along through it, and we've been able to consistently do that. We've done that through retooling a lot of the way we do things in the office. I'll give a very specific example. It's one that I used with the Vanguard Fellowship, which was microprotein testing in diabetics. We looked at it, and we found that we had not a good process in place, and frankly, we didn't do a lot of microtesting. And so we were missing that measure all the time. Instead of going out and trying to build a big process, we simply said, well, every person that comes in leaves us a sample. We'll have the nurses go back and look and see who hasn't had one done in the previous year, and if they didn't, we would automatically send it out. And in the process of automatically sending it out, we ended up with having 100% of the people coming to the office for their office visits having the microprotein test done. So that was a rather dramatic improvement by reanalyzing what we did and then just changing a process. The next step, of course, will be to analyze who doesn't come to the office that carries the diagnoses of diabetes and seeing how we can motivate them to come in. And so one of the things we did in the office was I've increased my staff by about 15%. I've added a whole new category of person in so that I used to have a nursing class, which basically room patients called them back, et cetera. I now added a medical assistant class of people in, and I've built a team of a nurse, medical assistant, and physician. So they are going to work together to better coordinate the care and to start to not only look at the patients that come in the door, but through population management tools, which we can use through our electronic health record, we're able to then identify those that are in panel to us that are not coming in and give them a call, find out what the barrier is, see if we can break that barrier down and get them in the door and get them cared for. So we've seen those types of improvements in the process.
Great. And you talked a little bit about electronic health records. We talked a little bit about meaningful use. So my next thing I wanted to focus on is what about health information exchange? Does that play a role?
Absolutely. We don't have health information exchange here just yet, but I know a lot about it. I serve on the New York State eHealth Collaborative, which is building the state information network. We should have it up and running here shortly, but the point-to-point communication between physicians is absolutely critical. That's called the direct network, and our EHR currently is certified to be able to do that, and once the state information network has come up in our region, which should be at the end of this month, we should be able to start doing point-to-point communications. So that's important to me because if I can send a short message to another physician with what's called a CDA document, I should be able to then get back from them that information that they're giving back to me about my patient. That will help with the transitions of care between two clinicians. The second area, though, is equally important, which is patient record lookup. Not always is there a point-to-point communication. For example, if my patient goes to an emergency room and they come into the office, right now I have a paper process. My medical records person calls over. They get their contact on the other side on the phone. They have their dialogue, and whoosh, they get faxed me the results of whatever was there. But patient record lookup should be able to gather that information from that site. It becomes very important. This is all in its infancy, there are areas that need to be improved. For example, I need to know every physician and patient in the direct network so that I don't have to fumble around trying to figure out who they are. You know, that data exists out there, but I need to have that. As I have better data, I'm better able to care for my patient. We need to have information at the point of care at the right time. And it's absolutely critical. And it's the only way to be able to take care of patients is that way. I don't need to reorder tests if it's been done before. So
gotcha.
I'm looking very much forward to that.
So what about other health IT challenges for CPC providers? Are you aware of any that they have?
Yes, we have them in our office. So many of the measures that we're trying to follow, both NQF and others, are not measures that are embedded in the EHR at this point in time. It's difficult at best to be able to get those measures out of the system. So, for example, if I wanted to look up diabetics with an A1C less than 9 in the office, I would have to search to get meaningful data. I have to do it on a monthly basis, and I'd have to do it by physician. That means that the person who looks up my data for me, who is my office manager, whom is also my chief technician, whom is also the person who runs the CPC project, you get the point, small office,
yeah,
don't have a lot of staff, has to run it for each physician, each measure, each month, and then collate that data together. So the EHR is not able to do the things that we would like it to be able to do at this point in time. We have to buy third-party vendor information to be able to gather the data, which is more time and more money. If our systems were more integrated, we'd be able to pull data points. So when we're doing care management, risk stratification, we have a module that's an attachment to our base EHR from the same company, but in fact, they don't talk exactly to each other. One's running a couple weeks behind in its data set than the other. So we can't, it's not an interactive system yet. It's better than it used to be when we didn't have that piece of integrated software that pulled some of the data, but it's not as robust as we would like it to be. We're not able to, with the health exchange, when it comes up, we'll be able to do patient record lookup on their portal, but that's not integrated into my EHR. So we're going to be using two systems on some of that. So again, it's a little clunky, but this is work in progress. I mean, think back. You know, in 1992, when I started practice, my cell phone was in a big leather bag that I carried like a suitcase. Now I have a smartphone that can do all these different things. IT, you know, when we started with this whole thing, was basically a, you know, billing system that then became a secretarial system. We could put information into the system. Now we're able to manipulate this data, and we're starting to be able to do population management and get quality data out of it. Now we're starting to connect them together so they're talking to each other. In the time frame that that has happened is really only over the last 8 or 9 years. It's just incredible how much these systems have been able to do, yet we need them to become better faster in order to take care of our population. And I think that the vendors understand that, but again, there's only so much bandwidth on that side that can handle it. So as CPC focuses them, as ONC focuses meaningful use, what's happening is we're pushing the vendors to give us better ways to take care of our patients. I think they're responding to that.
That's good to hear. Now, what about the RECs? What can they do to help providers who want to be successful in the CPC initiative?
I'm glad you asked that question, Karen, because I think that that has been key to our success as well. In New York, the REC is the New York eHealth Collaborative, and our local is Think and MedAllies. And I specifically mention them because they have been outstanding partners in helping us to get through what we do. You know, it's in the background. It's not like they're in my office every day, but they have helped us to be able to educate my staff. They gave me resources to work with. They have each step along the way provided me with some key piece of information or a little tweak of what I was doing that actually kind of got us over the hump. They really, you know, helped me through meaningful use. And back even before REC exists, when we were working with Medical Home, our region actually had a project that collaborated us together. The collective wisdom of a region is way better than my wisdom or anybody else's wisdom alone. And so when you get physicians together and you break down the barriers and you get us to all focus on the same direction, we do much better than our own little silos. And I think the RECs really helped us to do that.
Good. That's great to hear. Great feedback about them. Now, what about REC staff if they want to learn more about the CPC initiative? Any suggestions?
Well, absolutely. I think the Innovation Center is a fantastic place to start. That would be innovation.cms.gov. And then the HITRC Learning Center is another great place to look, and then also their portal. So I think that those are good places to start. And then of course, calling to a practice that's involved in this. I mean, there are 7 CPC regions in the country. Each one of them has a local convener that exists, and I think that those people, and I've talked to at least a couple of them, one in our region here, and then also in the Ohio region, and they're pretty responsive people. They're very engaged in wanting to see this process work.
Great. Those are great resources. Well, that's the end of my questions. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today about the CPC initiative, Dr. Heslin. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, Karen. I greatly appreciate it. The one thing I'll end with is that these type of projects are absolutely critical to our ability to practice medicine in the future. Now, everybody goes in with an idea of where we want to start in these projects, and sometimes we don't know where we're going to end up. But simply having them here and having us participate moves the ball forward. And I think that the more we can do things like this and start to shake up the tradition of how things have always been, we do better medicine and we take better care of our patients because we're able to build systems of medicine as opposed to silos of medicine. Thank you again for allowing me to participate.
Thank you.